So, Nate, happy birthday.
Thanks, dude.
Happy birthday party day.
Please don't sing me. Yeah.
Send some love to this guy.
Yeah.
It's his birthday.
Drop some positive comments.
It was actually his birthday, like, last week.
Yeah,
but
it's all right.
Hey, we live in the church calendar where we celebrate great things in octaves.
Yes.
So we're in the octave of your birthday.
The octave of the guardian angels.
Yeah, exactly. His birthday is the feast of the guardian angels.
Exactly.
Which, yeah, is really cool. It's actually also the patron of my monastery's congregation.
The guardian angels.
Yeah. So
I did not know that.
It's actually a solemnity for us, which
is
pretty sick.
It is for me too.
Yeah, right, exactly. So yeah. It wasn't named after one of the guardian angels, which, I guess we don't have any names of the guardian angels.
That's true. Well, actually, some people speculate that St. Michael was Christ's guardian angel.
I've heard that, which would be super cool.
And the guardian angels are chosen from any other choir. They're not one specific choir, so they could be, yours could be Gabriel, mine could be Raphael, we don't know.
Could you imagine?
It's kind of sick to think about.
You know that Gabriel was very likely the one who comforted Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane.
I like that.
Too.
Wow.
Because we hear a lot about like angel as a messenger. The word angel is actually a function. It's not exactly.
It's not refers to their nature, refers to their job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Gabriel's function is like comforter and deliverer of like specific big event news. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of cool.
That's so cool. I've never heard that before, but I like that.
So yeah, your first birthday after graduating, it's the I'm feeling 22 birthday, so I don't know how
22.
Many people sent you Taylor Swift
people
references.
References, definitely. No one sent me the music video, thankfully, and it's funny, at college, whenever someone turned 22, we would just play that song for them, but being, you know, out of college now, it's kind of the birthday nobody cares about anymore. Like, 21's the last birthday you really look forward to, and after that, it's like, okay, I guess we got T-Swizzle. Chilling with me, but otherwise, it was kind of a low key birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Different from birthdays in college.
Did you work?
Actually, that day I didn't work because I had a few things going on that I just couldn't. It's kind of nice. My work schedule is very flexible that I can arrange it at the beginning of each week. So I had a job interview that day, and I also had a Zoom meeting for basically this like investing advising session that I'm doing. And so between that and some other stuff going on, I just didn't work that day. So that was nice. I had the day off from work.
Yeah.
And went out for breakfast with mom and dad, and it was super cool. I got an omelet, so protein. So that's all it takes. That's all it takes to make my birthday happen, is getting some good protein. But it was a low-key day. Yesterday, we got to hang out as a family here at St. Vincent.
So yeah, that was awesome. Really nice. Everyone.
Everybody was here. We did a family photo.
Yeah.
It was kind of chaotic with the kids, but it was super
it was.
Good.
Philip was a good champ when Ellie, his cousin, was like climbing all over him.
Yeah, Ellie was good though too.
She was good, but it was a good time.
It was wild.
So yeah, first birthday out of college. Yeah. How are you feeling like post college in general? Well, actually, how about this question? How do you feel about the idea of college and higher education?
Like my experience of it, or just in general?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's start with like a little bit of like your experience and like why you thought it was beneficial for you to study at a higher level, study what you did, and maybe even study how you did, because it was very different than most people's.
Yes,
education.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
But also, just like maybe even from like a philosophical perspective, why is it important for us to learn?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we need to keep on learning? And can we ever say like, oh, I've learned enough?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, people have terminal degrees, so they don't learn anymore in that textbook definition of learning, but you can't stop learning in some ways, I would think. So,
yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I can't remember everything you said, but I'll just like try to
go in a random
direction.
Shoot from the hip.
My experience was really good of college, and I'm really glad I did it. To be honest, like you said, my experience was very unique. One thing, the college I went to is very small. Everybody goes there for the same degree program. It's, you know, the liberal arts focusing on philosophy and theology. But also just the style of education being Socratic was very unique. But I'm really glad I did that. And I'm glad I went to that particular school, not only because of all the friends I made there, but because of the style of education itself lends itself to people really taking their own academics seriously.
Mm.
Because part of Socratic method education is you have to be invested in learning. You can't just show up to class and listen to a lecture. You have to actually be invested. You have to make sure you've done your homework, and then participate yourself if you want to get something out of it.
So, for those who don't know, what actually is Socratic?
Sorry, yeah, I'm not even explaining that very well.
Because I would say if I'm, you know, my education is not really Socratic, but I have to take my education seriously. I have to, I'm responsible for doing my homework, for showing up.
Well, class. I wasn't saying it's the only way that you have to take your education seriously. No, I know, but it what encourages
makes,
it, I think.
What makes the Socratic method different from that, and what is it even?
Well, okay, so Socratic method is named after Socrates.
Boom.
Mind blown. And his style of discourse, his style of sharing knowledge was conversational. So if you read any of the Platonic dialogues in which Socrates is featured as the main character, he talks with people and he asks them questions. They go back and forth. They kind of work through a series of questions to reach some truth or knowledge at the end.
Okay.
And often it's not always concrete knowledge at the end. Sometimes you're left with more questions than answers. Yeah. But regardless, the point is that you're working through a conversational method to attain truth. And that's kind of how we conducted all of our classes. It was we would begin with an opening question. So rather than the professor walking in and going to the whiteboard or the blackboard or PowerPoint, whatever, and being like, all right, I'm going to tell you everything you need to know for today. He would come in and he would sit down around basically a round table.
Mm-hmm.
And as a discussion, as a class, he would begin with a question. It was the opening question. And we start talking. Like all of us students participate. We go back and forth. We debate. We share knowledge. And we have a discourse, basically, based on some amount of information that we were given before the class. So you have to read before class. I should say, you ought to read before class.
You didn't always.
It's not guaranteed. I didn't always. But you try to read before class every time in fullness and as thoroughly as you can. And, you know, hopefully, ideally, multiple times, because some of the readings are pretty dense. But you come prepared, and then you participate through discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why that's really cool is that, again, if you want to get something out of it, you kind of have to put something in, which is the case with all forms of education to some extent. But there's something really unique about when your method of education is not just passive and receiving someone talking, but you also sharing your own thoughts and not always sharing your thoughts because you know what's right. Sometimes, like in the Socratic method, a big part of it is honestly being like, hey, I don't understand what's going on here. Here are the ways in which I'm confused. Here are my questions. And then you getting those answered by your peers and by the professor. It's very cool. It allows everyone to be engaged.
And I would think that it allows you, and it sort of forces you to come to some conclusions before you even walk into the class.
Yeah.
And to really have tried to think about this before. Because that's definitely one thing I would know from, you know, just sitting in most of my classes being lecture style is – I didn't really have to know almost anything about the topic before I walked in. It's good if you do. And most of the classes, there'd be assigned reading.
But they're probably going to cover everything.
Exactly.
Class, right?
You could bank on that. Yep. But like, by the end of class, I'll probably really know what I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere, hopefully, along the midst of the class, you're starting to put things together and maybe you can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say a lot of opportunity was missed because so many of the questions that people would ask are really, really basic ones that they probably could have had answered if they had been forced to engage because they knew, I'm going to be asked a question. I'm going to have to talk about this. My one professor in philosophy when I was in college, though, she had questions that you had to have answered before you came into the class.
Wow.
And she would call on random people to answer them. And your
You had to take a
participation grade, which was like 30% of that class. I know it's way more in yours, but was based on how you answered those questions immediately when she called upon you. And then there would have to be two follow-ups. Two people would have to respond to their answer. So she approached it more Socratically. And I honestly think I was prepared way more for that philosophy class than most of my others.
Sure.
And that was one class. And you did not just philosophy, but theology, you know, English, music, math, all of it was approached from that same perspective.
Exactly.
What do you think there's a drawback from everything being discussion-based, though?
Right. Well,
because your teacher first sounds more like a facilitator than
necessarily. They are more facilitator. We actually call them tutors, even though they are professors in the sense that they have PhDs, but they're acting more as guides in the discussion. So first, real quick, just one other positive aspect of it, I think, would be it helps build some amount of moral character in social setting where you learn social humility because you have to be willing to admit that you're wrong. Like you might, like you said, you might go to class in this style of education with your own, I guess, prejudices, or like you've read the information yourself, so you might come with your own conclusions. But then in class, you find out you're totally wrong.
Right, right.
And so that's a very humbling experience. And so you have to be willing to accept the grace of social humility. But then, and if you don't do that, it's very bad for the class, and people get very frustrated with you reasonably. But then on the flip side, you also learn some amount of social confidence because not only are you humbled by admitting that you're wrong and engaging that kind of discussion, but you also have to be assertive sometimes and be like, no, actually, I'm not wrong here. And or even when you are just asking the question and admitting that you are confused about something, that takes a level of confidence itself.
Yeah.
So just through this method of education, it builds humility on one hand, but also the willingness to be assertive, both on the side of, you know, saying someone else is wrong or admitting that you're confused. So it builds kind of a whole character in addition to just filling you with knowledge.
And I would say the value of the art of communication that it teaches you.
Yeah.
Because I could have, you know, I had really smart classmates or continue to have other smart classmates who definitely know the material.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to ask them to explain it to me.
Yes.
Or say like, okay, this story is expected that you're presenting this to a big group of people. They might not be nearly as good. They know it in their head and they might be able to write down the answers.
Right.
Like on a paper. But the actual art of
putting it into words is a lot harder.
And this just seems like whether you're good at it or not, you have to become
good at it to some extent. Exactly. And not everybody's perfect by the end, but you do definitely grow. And sorry, but you asked, I guess, what are some of the drawbacks? I would say one little drawback with certain classes is you sometimes have the same experience that you might have from reading one of the Platonic dialogues, where, like I said, at the end of a Platonic dialogue, you might walk away with more questions than answers. And sometimes that's how class went, where you go into class with maybe just a few questions, and you're like, I think I understand what's going on here. Like, this reading made sense, but I'm not quite sure. And then after class, you're like, I have no idea anymore. Like, based on that discussion, based on some of the questions the tutor asked, I do not know what's going on. And you feel a little bit more confused. But there's some beauty in that. For one thing, it encourages curiosity in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it lends itself more to that humility that I was talking about. So even that's not a major drawback, but that was hard with certain of the classes we took, like related to science or mathematics, where like sometimes they just want like a clear-cut answer. Like
definition.
But no, the discussion is a little more open.
Which, so, to me, that's crazy. Being a science
undergrad. You were a science, yeah.
Undergrad.
So a lot of math, too.
Yeah, taking math. That there was, of all the other classes I took, even history, but you know, English, philosophy, theology, there was some room for discussion.
Mm-hmm.
There was no room for discussion in math.
No.
Like, this is how the math works. Mm-hmm. This is how you get to your conclusion.
Right.
And it's crazy to me to think that like you even approached math in almost this question and answer approach.
Right. Well, just because I think what we were doing is questioning even what you just said. In the sense that you said, this is what math looks like. It's like, well, someone had to decide that.
Yeah.
Like, even looking through the history of math, it's weird. You think of math as being very simple platitudes, like 1 plus 1 equals 2, and like, of course, it's simple. There's no room for debate there. But when you realize how many different complexities there are in math and how you can conceptualize math, whether it's number theory or like differences between continuous quantities and discrete quantities, all these kind of things, you realize that in the history of math, there have been a lot of debates.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
We kind of have grown up thinking that it's always like black and white and there's only like one correct way to do it, but people have had debates about these things, and if they have, then we should reckon with that. So this is kind of, we're going off on a tangent, I guess, but anyway, with my experience, that was in a way a drawback, but it was also actually really cool.
Yeah,
it was really cool to recognize that there are some more ambiguities in certain domains than we normally think. But and that, sorry, going back to your opening question,
yes,
to mention opening questions, you were kind of asking, what do I think about education in general, going off my experience? I think higher education is extremely valuable. And I'm not just saying that because I did it. Like, I think it's valuable because, like, in my own experience, I know I was much less mature or aware of the different ways of thinking before I went to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time I presumptuously thought, oh yeah, I'm pretty well formed. I'm pretty mature. I know how to think. I know what to think about. And then by the end of college, I feel like an entirely different person. And not that I'm perfect. Like, I'm still flawed in a lot of ways, and I still have a lot of room for growth, especially intellectually. But I just feel like there was a lot of growth that happened that if I had not gone to college, or if I had not gone to college there specifically,
mm-hmm.
it would not have happened. And there was a lot of maturing that happened there. And I think especially because college takes place at that very formative time in our lives, you know, on average 18 and 22, 18, 23. It's really important that you choose to spend that time wisely and spend it in an environment that's going to foster growth rather than just complacency. Or
because
otherwise, you might just spend those years and not mature. and that's kind of wasted time, right? So I think it's important to seek out higher education, but it's important that you choose where to do that, and you do that carefully, because just as if you go to the right place, you could spend those years deeply growing maturity and fostering virtue and learning. If you go to the wrong place, you could spend those years just devolving into a worse person. So it's not guaranteed one way or the other, but I think as an institution, higher education is something valuable.
Yeah, do you think that
I don't know. Whole spiel, you said,
I don't know if that distinction actually exists or what you think about if there's actually like a difference between learning and education.
Yeah. So I think it's really good that you brought that up, because you are referring to a very real distinction there. You did mention a bunch of different terms there, like wisdom and knowledge, and I think wisdom and knowledge go together. But there is seemingly a distinction between the term education, or at least the way we commonly use the phrase higher education versus learning. So I think higher education as a term has a lot of baggage with it, in that we don't really refer to it as just the process of coming to know higher things. We refer to it more as reference to the whole institution of academia and everything that goes with that. So like universities, and particularly modern Western universities. So it's kind of like, I think the difference between higher education as a phrase, at least the way we use it, and learning might be almost like the difference between big pharma and medicine, right? In that what higher education sells that it offers and it says that it is going to bring us is learning and all the knowledge that goes along with that. But then, in addition to that learning, there's also the baggage that goes along with, you know, the costs of higher education and the experience that a lot of people have, which is often negative experience and stuff. And so just as like we might like medicine and we know medicine is worthwhile, but we might be disillusioned with big pharma, I think the same thing can happen with higher education as a whole institution, as a whole cloud of universities, as opposed to learning. So I think when it's treated ideally, higher education does foster learning. We don't do it necessarily the best in America or in a lot of Western countries, but that's what it's ordered towards, just even though it's executed imperfectly. So I think though education shouldn't be opposed to learning.
I think you made a really good distinction there, that like done properly they are together,
right?
But the idea of higher education brings on all of these extra things, which is why some people don't pursue higher education. Just like, I'm not built for college. Like, who I am. But they're very intelligent people.
Right. What they mean is they're not built to experience higher education the way that it's done nowadays.
Yeah.
They don't want to go through that whole university experience that a lot of people have told them is terrible and a waste of time or expensive. And that's understandable. But what they should be recognizing is that they still need to be learning one way or the other. We all need to be learning constantly. And there's no, in this life, there's no limit to, for one thing, the potential for our learning and for our expansion of knowledge, but also there's no end point in our duty to learn. We should, it's an obligation as human beings to be striving for more knowledge and always seeking wisdom. Because for one thing, wisdom reaches its climax in God. So striving for wisdom is a striving for God. And, you know, according to the very beginning of Aristotle's Metaphysics, there's just that great line. It says, man by nature desires to know. It's part of our nature to want to learn things. And if we say, you know what? Learning is fun between K through 12th grade. After that, you know, I'm good. I'll just stick with that knowledge and then, you know, maybe do some stuff with the rest of my time or just work a job and not focus on learning. If we do that, we're kind of violating our nature. We're opposing a natural inclination and a natural desire and a natural obligation that we have. So, you know, it doesn't have to be in college, but in some way or another, we should always be striving to learn more things, and not just of necessarily the things that we like thinking about, but we should be pushing ourselves and allowing ourselves to strive and struggle with, like, learning more about areas and domains that we aren't familiar with. Otherwise, we can get really complacent and be like, I know enough to get by. Like, that's all.
Right,
For one thing, we just become very boring people. Like, it's you're not an interesting person if you don't try to learn things.
And I definitely think that those are tend to be the people who don't dialogue well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you said that was kind of the whole point of this Socratic method, is being forced into dialogue, kind of whether you like it or not, and to be challenged by people who have come to different conclusions than you, maybe potentially admitting you're wrong.
Yes.
And someone who kind of has given up on this need to learn more, kind of is complacent in, I've done what I need to do, or here we go. They stick to then only the principles that they accept and understand.
Yeah.
And anything that comes in contrast to that, they just reject as wrong.
Right.
And they can't even dialogue with it. And I think we see that a lot of days. Even people who have gone through higher education.
Oh, it definitely can happen.
Sometimes they haven't facilitated that maturity that comes with true learning. Mm-hmm. So they're just stuck in this inability to converse with others. I agree. Learning is essential. We always need to learn because and always grow in our deepen of knowledge because, as you said, the pursuit of wisdom, pursuit of God. God is infinitely knowable. Mm-hmm. There's always more we can learn and discover about God. Mm-hmm. And that can be like very pointed when we kind of study, let's say, philosophy or theology maybe, which pursues God in a more obvious way. But it's also, since he created everything, learning whatever it is, as long as it's part of the created order, is to also still pursue knowledge of God, maybe more indirectly.
Right.
But would you say that there is a ranking of learning that we should prioritize? Because we can't know everything.
We can't know
everything. We have the capacity to know infinitely because that doesn't mean that we are infinitely knowable like God is. We have the capacity to know because our intellect was created by God. And even though it doesn't reach that infinite place because we ourselves...
It doesn't actualize it, but it has an infinite potential.
It has an infinite potential. Thank you. Thank you for using the philosophical words that I was trying to...
Basically, our souls, including our minds, are of such a nature, they've been made by God in such a nature that they can receive any forms, they can receive any amount of knowledge in this world.
Yes.
Anything that is intelligible, meaning knowable and able to be understood, is something that we can take in.
Yes.
And there's no natural limit on that in this universe. God, of course, we can't comprehend in this life. We will see him hopefully in heaven. But, you know, of the things that God has created, we are able to know all of that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean we actually will necessarily have the time to actualize all of that.
Right. So that's kind of what I was saying is we don't have an infinite amount of time on Earth, mm-hmm. and we don't even have an infinite ability to focus. Mm-hmm. So how do we prioritize what should be learned, what we need to be doing, like, consistently? Mm-hmm. Because if someone doesn't pursue college, let's say, are they written off from the idea to ability to learn? Mm-hmm. Or should they just focus on X, Y, or Z?
Right.
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, they're definitely not written off from the ability to learn because, like there are so many wise people throughout history that never went to college. There have been people way more intelligent than college graduates who never went to college. And so... I guess one thing that would be really good to do, whether you've gone to college or not, is to kind of, like I said before, be pushing yourself to learn even in areas that you might not be comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So often we put ourselves into boxes where we say, well, I'm a math person, or no, I'm not a math person. I'm a theology person. Like, I really like learning about the faith, but I don't really want to talk about science. I don't really want to talk about physics. All that's just like, that's too smart for me. I'm not that smart. We shouldn't put ourselves into boxes because, again, by nature, we humans are built to know. We are made to desire knowledge, and we're made to achieve and pursue that desire. And so, it's not healthy for us to just write off certain categories of learning as not possible for us. Some people are more math inclined, some people are more inclined towards philosophy and stuff, but we should all be kind of trying to expand our knowledge in all domains as much as we can. Now, that doesn't mean we, again, have time for all that, and so the kind of the thing is, we need to prioritize our time by choosing, I think, the things that are most essential for our salvation. Mm-hmm. So that'd be theology and philosophy insofar as it supplements theology. We should prioritize that and make sure we're really grounded in that. But then in addition to that, once we have a good practice, even if it's like a disciplined, regular practice of spending a few minutes every day reading some work of theology, whether it's Aquinas, Augustine, even just the Catechism. The Catechism is a great place to begin if you want to learn more theology or just learn about the beliefs of our faith. You start with that, but then once you have a developed routine of that sort of thing and you're growing in knowledge consistently that way, then you can start to think, okay, maybe for this month or this next few months, I'm going to try to learn a little bit more about science every day. Mm-hmm. And then maybe after that, for the next few months, I'm going to learn a little bit more about the history of art and different artists. And then, you know, maybe a few months later, I'll spend a little time learning more about math and maybe even try to... the thing is, we live in the information age. There's more... We really have no excuse not to try to learn as much in every domain as possible.
Yeah.
So you could learn, if you're like, I'm not a math person, watch some YouTube videos. There are YouTube videos that will very literally simply on everything. Explain calculus, even like things that are, we like, whoa, calculus, that sounds scary. It's like, no, it actually doesn't have to be that scary. Mm-hmm. And there are so many YouTube channels that are devoted to teaching us knowledge in a way that's very accessible to anybody. And so, you know, we need to take advantage of the information age. The information age has so much baggage that's come with it, so many negative things that come with the internet. We need to spend more time making a concerted effort to utilize it in a really good way in learning. And so whether you've gone to college or not, you can do that. And you can grow in knowledge in all those various disciplines. It's just a matter of like putting in time. It doesn't have to be a ton of time. It could be 10, 15 minutes a day where you're like, this is my learning time of the day, where I'm going to make sure I'm learning some new information. But yeah, sorry, what was your... I feel like you asked another...
No, I think that was a lot of what I was asking about. But I also was asked, like, if we are kind of broadening. So I think that's a really good approach, like being willing to kind of not jump from one thing to the other all the time, but like kind of spending a little time
of our life where we focus
in one thing and then move to another. Right. But is there something that we should still kind of, in all of that, remain as a priority? Mm-hmm. You mentioned first and foremost philosophy that supplements theology and then theology. Mm-hmm. That I don't think can ever take like just a season. I think that has to be that continuous be through the whole thing. Exactly.
Because it's supposed to support our spirituality, which is never supposed to stop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as one of my professors said, our knowledge of God is to lead us to a deeper love of God. And if our knowledge doesn't lead us to God in love, then we don't actually know Him. Mm-hmm. And theology, which is, you know, we understand, like, the study of God, isn't all about, okay, just doctrines. Academics, right? Yeah. There are some really good, deep theologies that aren't heady. Mm-hmm. They're just simple because God is simple. Mm-hmm. Because God, by saying that God is simple, is God to be complex means you're made up of multiple parts, and God is not, because God is perfectly united in Himself. So He's simple. We make things complex because we are multiple parts, right? Mm-hmm. Body and soul joined together, yes, but still distinct. Mm-hmm. But that theology is supposed to grow us in almost into the life of the Trinity, as my professor would say, because the more we know God, the more we're able to enter into the love of union. Yeah. And
it should draw us into simplicity.
Exactly. Yeah. The more we know is actually should simplify us.
Absolutely.
So that by the time we get to things like the end, Thomas Aquinas kind of said that, like, even after one mystical experience, he realized like everything, all that theology he had written was straw in comparison, mm-hmm. because that's actually the end goal, mm-hmm. is to really be simple.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people almost approach it in the other way. It's like, oh, well, it's so complex. And the more you learn, it's just going to get more and more and more complex.
Yeah.
And I can't do that.
Exactly.
So I'm just going to kind of stick with what I know.
We get overwhelmed because I think we think of theology the same way we might think about other disciplines of knowledge, where there's a lot of areas of knowledge that we kind of approach like trivia. Like, growing in knowledge just means accumulating a bunch of facts.
Yes.
And you just collect those facts by the thousand. Or even like the catechism, the way the catechism is set up.
Yeah,
there's true. Like, 3,000 paragraphs, a little more than 3,000 paragraphs. So we're like, wow. So, you know, growing in knowledge of the faith, I guess, just means like memorizing thousands of articles and little passages about what we believe. But that's not it. The point is, it's all supposed to converge on a unity. And you actually can recognize that you're growing in understanding of the faith and in theology when things start to kind of mesh and come together. And you actually see the wholeness, you see the unity and the totality. And so, I mean, that's really the mark of, you can tell when someone really knows their stuff in any field, mm-hmm. is when there's so much unity to what they say. There's no divisions, there's no things being out of line with each other. They all kind of mesh. And so I think that can help us. I'm really glad you brought this up, because that can help us avoid being overwhelmed by approaching learning new things, is realizing it's not about just accumulating as many facts as possible. It's about seeing the beauty and the fullness of this one singular unity. Mm-hmm. And that can happen, I'd mentioned the Catechism or the Summa, but that can happen also through reading the lives of the saints. That's a form of growing in theology. It's, mm-hmm. it's just because you're witnessing the manifestation of God's goodness in a particular person's life.
Yeah.
Or by reading in different spiritual works, by whether it's Thérèse Lisieux or John of the Cross, like things that are less relating to doctrine and more relating to spiritual growth.
Yes, yeah.
So I'm really glad you brought that up. Also, the theology and philosophy, those are supposed to be lifelong disciplines that we maintain throughout. But then other areas of life that are less relevant to our salvation are things that can kind of come and go. But we should always, I think, still be expanding our knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even math and science and art and all those things.
Well, I think what we really said, so we haven't recently like brought in like by definition or by naming the transcendentals. It's kind of the subtle undertones of all our podcasts is supposed to be kind of a growth in our experience and pursuit of the transcendentals of truth, goodness, beauty, and unity.
Right.
But it would seem like learning is actually our active pursuit and engagement of them. So in knowledge, we see truth, right? Like you said, when you start to see the order of things, it becomes more beautiful.
Yes.
And in philosophy, we can really start to understand, okay, this is good here. You know, we can pursue that. And all of it is to aim us towards seeing that singular union that God has bestowed in all of his creation.
Right.
That is most apparent to us when we study his nature more in theology and philosophy. But is also revealed through the extension of those other disciplines. So that unity, that really is the final goal, right? That's heaven. Heaven is unity.
Yeah.
Unity with what? With whom, I should say? God, who is goodness, truth, and beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So to be in heaven, the beatific vision is to actually just be in the one union of the transcendental experience.
Yeah. And why would we wait until then
to start
the fullness of the transcendentals, right?
Yeah.
That's why, I don't remember who it was, if it was C.S. Lewis or someone else, that said this quote, "The whole road to hell is hell, and the whole road to heaven is heaven." Meaning basically, you know, hell is a place of misery, of ignorance, of darkness, and so the way down there is a pretty depressing and dark path. But in contrast, to look on the more positive side, heaven is the place where we possess truth, goodness, and beauty in their fullness. So the way to heaven should also involve us always seeking truth, goodness, and beauty.
Huh.
And a really great way to do that is through constant learning. And this can sound kind of oppressive in a way, or not oppressive, but it can sound like, okay, great, just another thing to add
daunting
to our busy routines. Like, we already have to take care of our jobs, we already have to take care of everything else in our lives and all of our relationships and social life and everything. And now we got to add to it that we're trying to put pressure on ourselves to learn all the time. It sounds intimidating, but it doesn't have to be an intimidating task. It should be something that brings joy to life. And it shouldn't also have to be a big time commitment, just on a practical level. Like this, you can learn a little bit about the world and a little bit about the beauty of God's creation every day in a very short amount of time.
I mean, that's part of the reason why we want this podcast to exist, is to hope to, at least to the best that we can, facilitate some learning for people. We learn a lot from each other when we talk with each other. There's a lot of times afterwards I'll just be like, Nate, like, those were so good points I would never in a million years have thought of. The dialogue, right? They go back to even the definition of Socrates and the dialogues, and that's how knowledge was reached, was through conversation.
Yeah.
Because union, right? That's just, to me, it's like putting all these together. Like, in communion, like, truth is more obvious. If we're just stuck in ourselves, we're only ever going to be able to come to a very narrow definition or understanding of things, because it's only based on me, my experience, what I can comprehend.
Yeah.
Exactly. Intellectual navel gazing. I like that.
I'm really glad you just brought that in, actually, because I have to correct some of the things I was just saying. A lot of what I was saying was encouraging a singular, like, personal discipline to learn, but it's not, it shouldn't ideally be just you by yourself trying to be disciplined and learning new stuff. It's actually really good. It's a very simple way to learn is to find a friend or a few friends, ideally, and discuss some higher things with them.
Yeah.
So when you're, like, having a beer with your friend, don't just be talking about, oh, how are the Yankees doing? Like, well, maybe no one who watches this cares about the Yankees. But don't just talk about sports or, like, or, you know, your truck or whatever. Like, those are really fun things to talk about. But, you know, once in a while, bring in a question of philosophy or theology or even something related to math or science. Maybe even if it's just, like, some new fact that you learned, some little bit of trivia, talk about that and bring that in, and then maybe they'll have something to share with you, because that's the place where understanding can happen and where new knowledge can be fostered, is when you're in dialogue with other people.
But discuss it, not just spit out something you know. Because I've definitely been, I've been that person. I've been in conversation with someone's like, did you know this? And they just say it. Like, so you're just flexing. You don't.
Yeah.
And sometimes maybe it's said in a way that it can bring response, or the people that they talk to are actually able to respond. But how can you teach others, which teaching is a great way to learn as well. How can you teach others something you know by inviting them into a learning experience? And how can you ask good questions?
Asking good questions.
Asking questions is a good way to find things out, right?
That's, what's that from? Oh, it's from some game we played.
Yeah.
I remember that, some video game where, like, the narrators are like, asking questions is a good way to get answers. Yeah, but it's true. It's good questions is actually makes you a really interesting conversationalist. People will love talking to you if you ask good questions, much more than if you just have interesting statements to say. Because for one thing, asking questions. People love expressing their opinions. So if you ask them questions, they're really going to want to talk to you. Because like, it makes them feel good. But yeah, like that's a really huge skill that people don't emphasize enough, is the ability to ask good intellectual questions. And it can even be on something that seems maybe relatively mundane that you take for granted. For example, this is a way you can bridge the gap between just a normal everyday conversation into something a little more philosophical. Is say you're talking with friends about clothes. You're like, yeah, like I like this style of fashion. I don't like that style. Pull the question into it with your friend. Be like, what do you think makes something good fashion? Like, what do you think constitutes good style? And actually, you know, settle into that conversation for a little while. Let them share their thoughts. Allow yourself to share your own thoughts and kind of work through it. Just like stuff like that. Or if you're discussing sports, be like, what do you think makes a good sport?
What is healthy competition? Why do we need competition in our life?
Exactly. What is a principle by which you judge that one sport is better than another or more highly attains the form of a sport? Like just
ranks athletes?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
So you got runners, which are awesome athletes, and right. You got lifters. They're two completely different disciplines. Right. We both call them athletes, though. So
what kind of physical fitness or achievement seems most valuable then?
Yeah.
And these are like questions that we might be wording them kind of complexly, but you can very simply bring these things into what was ordinarily just a normal discussion. And then, boom, you've had an opportunity for knowledge on just an everyday interaction.
And that, you by doing that, you answered for me the kind of another question I was having, which was, okay, so does this learning mean people have to be picking up books all of the time? I think in some ways that should always be something we're striving to do.
Yeah.
Because this is going to be a sort of different metaphor, but Father Boniface will say, we can't pray at all times, which, you know, people talk about, oh, I'll pray at work, or I'll pray when I do this, da da da. You can't pray at all times if you don't actually pray at a time. If you don't have a specific time set up to pray, don't expect for you to be praying like when you're working.
Right.
I think the same thing works here. Like, if you don't actually have a facilitated, designated time to do some kind of concrete learning, I don't know if these conversations will actually genuinely flow out of who you are.
Right.
Maybe they will, but I feel like the people who I know who are best conversationalists are also people who are actively learning new things.
Yeah, it's just like any other category of discipline, whether it's fitness or prayer or anything like that. The only way you're really going to enter into this lifestyle is through daily discipline and through daily practice. So if you're not, you can't always be learning if you're not sometimes specifically making the effort to learn.
Yeah.
And so every day you can cultivate that practice of trying to learn a little bit. And what's cool, again, if you want to motivate yourself to do this through some selfish motivation, just realize that it'll make you a much more interesting person. Next time you're at a dinner party, you want it to be like, yeah, man, nice weather we've been having lately. You can be like, no, actually, did you know about this one really interesting style of art from the 1500s? And people be like, no, I didn't know about that. Tell me more about that. And if they don't want to talk about anything deep, then like that's kind of a boring person themselves. But the point is like at dinner
don't
parties.
Don't do it and sound like a pompous ass.
Don't try to be like, allow me to tell you about this. You can bring it up in a subtle way that encourages conversation and not just you lecturing to people.
And there are so many YouTube videos about, do you want to become the most interesting person in the room? Do you want to be the influence, the life of the party?
Yeah.
And
the
all
common
about these,
theme
like,
in a lot of them, though, strategy. Is actually just like know some interesting things.
Yeah, which is
do some interesting things.
And you know, not everyone wants to be like you, like the life of the party. And I'm not saying that knocking on him in that regard of like, oh, you need attention. It's just his strengths lend themselves to being an influencing individual who people like want to engage with, and he wants to like engage with lots of people. What? Why are you laughing?
No, keep going.
I am on kind of the opposite spectrum. I tend to want to be just around maybe two or three individuals, but I like who those two, three individuals to be to want to be engaged with me, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to just be like, oh, well, these are the people I'm comfortable with, whatever.
So we'll just sit in the corner
being
sad.
If I'm going to be with them, I want to actually get
dialogue,
somewhere.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it also makes for better memories and better, a whole better lifestyle. It's kind of like, I don't know, we can spend our, you know, there's that common phrase, living with your head in the sand.
Mm.
Often we do that, where we settle into a routine where we're just working our way through the practical things, all the needs we have to do, like, you know, getting that paycheck, doing our work, just going about our business. And we can kind of be living with our head in the sand, where we're not taking in new information, we're not gaining any new hobbies or skills that will make us a more interesting person or bring about a more flourishing life. We're just kind of going about our business mindlessly. But it's such a rewarding and great feeling when you finally just lift your head out of the sand and like take in the fresh air and look up at the sky and look at the reality, the beauty that's all around us, and be like, wow, actually there's so much more interesting things in life than what I've just been doing. There's so many more interesting things to think about than what I've been thinking about the last few weeks or few months or few years of my life. Mm-hmm. And when you finally take in that larger vision and you realize there's a whole world to see and a whole world of like knowledge to encounter, then people will be drawn to that because they say like, oh, this person's actually living. Their life is flourishing. They see the beauty and the truth and the goodness around them, and they're not just living with their head in the sand. And then it'll be contagious. That's the thing. When it has like a ripple effect.
Yeah.
Where once you start being devoted to gaining knowledge and being more interesting, other people are going to want to do the same thing. And then kind of your whole circle of friends and your community is going to strive more for truth, goodness, and beauty, which ideally is what we want to be doing anyway, right, as a community.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in a way, it's this kind of form of intellectual evangelization where we always think about evangelization as saying, allow me to tell you about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. That's That works.
That
for
valid.
Some people, that works.
Valid.
You know, try knocking on someone's door sometime and doing that. That's a really interesting thing to do. But I've never actually tried that myself. But another way you can evangelize people is simply by lifting your head out of the sand and being curious and fascinated with the world. Having a sense of wonder is such a contagious thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And so when you have a sense of wonder
about
philosophy.
Probably love children.
Exactly, because they have wonder. And we're like, we look at that and we recognize there's something so good in that. But we sometimes forget as adults to emulate that. But if you do emulate that and you take on that sense of wonder as an adult, then it becomes infectious because people are like, wow, I want what they want. I want to be able to look at the world with new eyes and be actually interested in wanting to learn new knowledge about philosophy or theology or science or math or whatever. And then they start all seeking truth, goodness, and beauty together.
Yeah. Right? And two things. You said, like,
sorry, that was a
lead,
lot.
No, you're great. They lead to better memories.
Yeah.
Because imagine, you know, you had a conversation with your buddies, whatever, and it was just, you were just smoking and joking for 2 hours. You left. You probably had, like, a good experience.
Good feeling, like, good vibes.
And that comes from the fact that you had some communion with other people, which is an experience of a transcendental, right, union. Mm-hmm. But do you really feel like you come back changed from it? Probably not necessarily. But if you had like a deeper conversation about some true realities or even struggles that you're going on in your life, that you're not just, you know, complaining, but you're searching for the truth that's hidden behind why what's going on in your life is going on, you're going to walk back and say, there's something else I'm going to do with this now.
Yes.
Like, you lay in bed, maybe not like restlessly, but just like kind of in that wonder of like, wow, something is different. And
kind of elevated like, from
experience
some
I had of
life.
This
yeah.
is a podcast episode I did recently with Jess Smith. I'm just talking with her about her experience of the Eucharist, the truth of her experiencing the beauty and the goodness and the unity of who Jesus is in the Eucharist.
Right.
I could just see in her, like you said, that wonder. And I went to Spiritual Direction the next day and just told Father Tom, like, I think I'm, like, dramatically changed after that conversation.
Wow.
I don't see things or feel things the same. Like, it's weird. Overnight.
It's crazy. Isn't that incredible?
And because we can't experience the transcendentals without them affecting us. They will change us if we allow them to. And learning and being open to new experiences of learning, striving for it personally, but then in a communal setting, that's to facilitate an experience of the transcendentals. And guess what that is? Then, like you said earlier, it's to experience a little bit of heaven.
Yeah. No, those conversations are absolutely life-changing, way more than just talking about the weather, talking about the
mundane.
It elevates us above the muck of the mundane. And then those become kind of lights along our path towards heaven. And we can look at those, and we look back on them and be like, I remember that. And that actually left a change on my soul. And even if it's not something crazy deep, just very weird questions or unique questions pertaining to knowledge are so much more memorable. They make for conversations way more memorable. Like you said, if you have just some time smoking and joking with your buddies, you might have some good vibes.
Yeah.
But you're honestly going to remember anything you talk about years down the road. But I will always remember, you know, someone who does this really well, is really good conversationalist and great at asking weird but interesting questions, is our good friend Vince Lombardi.
Dude, I was literally just thinking about one of my compliments I gave him was, Vince, you have the most beautiful, bizarre questions I've ever
so
heard
bizarre,
in my life.
But I will never forget the conversations with him, because I will never forget one of the first conversations I had with him. We were walking in Rome, and we were just touring around, and he just said, I just met him, so very new. And he just confidently asked, like, so have you ever experimented with eating food in the shower? I'm like, who is this guy? Like, no, actually, Vince, I haven't. And that was a year and a half ago, and I remember that conversation because it was so weird, but it was so interesting, and it got me inspired after that. Like, no, now I'm going to go try eating an orange in the shower, like he said, because he says you bite an orange in the shower, in a hot shower. The aroma of that citrus orange just permeates through the orange, and you have the cool orange and the hot water. Anyway, the point is that
put the orange in the freezer a little bit right before you get in, by the way. Pro tip.
Extra cold, yes.
Yeah.
pristine. But, like, I will always remember that conversation because it was different. He didn't ask me, what sports are you into? What kind of music you listen to? Those are fun things to talk about, too. I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about those things with our friends. But, like, he asked me something kind of out there that yeah. pertained to knowledge and some sort of wonder that I had never experienced before. And I was like, wow. So then it inspired me, and it's memorable because of that. So, like, if you can cultivate a life of being a little bit weirder and a little bit more like a child in the yeah. sense of wonder, like, that's impactful for people around you and for yourself, and it'll make you much happier. Hmm. So,
yeah, so... What's something you're learning or going to start learning more of?
Honestly, I want to learn more about American history. Especially, well, I really want to learn more about World War II history right now.
Okay.
And I just started a book about that. It's actually a biography of a priest in Nazi Germany.
Oh, Under the Shadow of His Wings?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Phenomenal book.
So I'm really excited about reading that.
That's sweet.
So I said American history, and then I just referenced something about German history. But I just kind of want to learn more about World War II and yeah. especially America's involvement in it. But
nice.
That's, like, one thing that, you know, it's not practical. It's not going to help me get a job necessarily. But it's something that is going
to I'm going to be able to share.
Exactly. And I'll be able to talk with people about it.
Yeah.
And how about you?
Well, being in seminary, I'm doing a lot of learning.
That's true.
But something I've been really fascinated and I want to spend more time with, I haven't done a lot, is the phenomenology of empathy. So St. Edith Stein was an immensely brilliant philosopher.
Yeah.
She studied under Edmund Husserl, who's like the founder of phenomenology. And they kind of split actually over this understanding of phenomenology of emotion, particularly of empathy. And she wrote her dissertation on it. And what, like, I won't go into all, phenomenology is kind of a philosophical language for, like, human experience. How do we actually talk about what are the things that we do experience as we experience them? Not, like, trying to go so deep as to try to figure out every single part about what this defines as,
kind of
which is its own branch of philosophy.
Right.
But it's like, what do we explain, what we see, how we see it, and what it feels like to us? And
just by way of tangent, John Paul II was heavily influenced
yes,
by phenomenology.
Very much. So she particularly talks about empathy and not being generally the most empathetic person. I have times of empathy for sure, but I really wanted to go into, like, a philosophical dive of the concept of empathy to understand what does it feel like to be someone who feels like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Can you empathize with empaths? I don't know. Basically, but yeah. So I haven't done as much with that as I would like to, but that's definitely a, like, if I get a little bit of free time here and there, I'm trying to, like, okay, get, like, three sentences of this in. So
that's all you need. Yeah, just fitting kind of it into the cracks in your routine.
Yeah.
Because we all, the thing is,
capitalize on the 20 minutes that you have between things. They exist.
We're
on our phones for most of them, but if we were actually opened a book.
That's something I realized a lot this summer is I'll waste maybe multiple hours in a day, and then I look back, I'm like, man, I don't remember sitting down for an hour or two wasting time on my phone for that long. But it wasn't that I did it for a really long time like that. What it was is there was a little 5-minute break between before I started work where I, you know, just scrolled on my phone for a minute. Or there was 5 minutes later where, you know, I was just kind of not doing anything in particular. And then there was another 15 minutes later where I was being unproductive. But so we can kind of look at time slots and be like, 10, 15 minutes is too short a time to really do anything big. So I'm just going to give up on that time and be unproductive in it. But if we look at those time and be like, that might not be enough time to do a workout or to do a work shift or to do anything major, but that is enough time to learn a little bit. Even if it's just going on Wikipedia, so my voice is cracked. Even if it's going on Wikipedia for a few minutes and learning about some historical fact you never knew about or some saint, you can do it in 5-10 minute chunks. And then those little spots in the day that are the gaps between the bigger tasks that we have become productive in their own way. And then by the end of the day, instead of having, you know, an hour of wasted time, you've had an hour of knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's really cool.
That is really
cool.
It's
an absolute win. So
sick.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hope you did learn something today.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear, what are you going to learn? What are you going to spend some time with? Leave a comment below so we can see what people are interested in finding more about. If you have any questions about things you would like to learn more about that potentially Nate and I could talk about, also drop a comment below.
He knows more than me about probably most areas of life.
I would tend to disagree on that.
Biochem major, master's in philosophy. Now you're a monk. Do you know all the rules St. Benedict stuff?
But still,
you know what it's like to be celibate.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways.
Permanently.
He always brings in that thing right at the end.
I just love bringing his celibacy
right at the end. You know. Anyways.
I'm the thorn in his side.
If there's discussion topics that you would like for us to have a podcast episode about, also leave a comment below. Look out for hopefully some future videos of Nate coming out, focusing a little bit more on the Doctors of the Church.
Yeah, that's what you can learn about.
You can learn about those.
Doctors of the Church are very cool.
All epics and legends. Yeah, if you want to see the podcast episode that I was speaking about that really was a learning experience that I felt the transcendentals really strongly in my life, you can check out that episode with Jess right here. And if you want to just check out some monk content, you can check out the playlist where I talk about what it like to be a monk, and you can learn about Benedictine monasticism.
You can learn a lot, actually.
Right here. So, thank you for joining us for another episode of All Good in Brotherhood.
Absolutely.
I'm Brother Francisco.
I'm Nate.
I'm a monk. He's not.
I'm not.
Have a great day.
Maybe you won't be.
Bye.
Peace.